Welcome to the Jukebox Podcast from WP Tavern. My name is Nathan Wrigley. Jukebox is a podcast which is dedicated to all things WordPress. The people, the events, the plugins, the blocks, the themes, and in this case, the efficacy of website usability testing for WordPress projects. If you'd like to subscribe to the podcast, you can do that by searching for WP Tavern in your podcast player of choice, or by going to wptavern.com/feed/podcast, and you can copy that URL into most podcast players. If you have a topic that you'd like us to feature on the podcast, I'm keen to hear from you and hopefully get you or your idea featured on the show. Head to wptavern.com/contact/jukebox and use the form there. Today, I bring you the first in a mini-series of podcasts I recorded in person at WordCamp Asia in Manila. This flagship WordPress event brought together hundreds of WordPress professionals, enthusiasts, and all manner of interested parties under one roof for a three-day event, one contributor day, and 2 days of presentations. I tracked down several of the speakers and workshop organisers and recorded them speaking about the subject they were presenting upon. I hope that you enjoy what they had to say. So on the podcast today, we have the first of those conversations, and it's with Joe Minnie. Joe, based in Perth, Australia, is passionate about user experience, data-driven decision-making, cats, pockets, and travel. She's a small business founder and works with organisations creating digital platforms with WordPress. She also freelances as a UX consultant. She volunteers with Mission Digital to address social issues using technology and is an ambassador for She Codes Australia, promoting tech accessibility for women. Recognised as a 2023 Shining Star by Women in Technology Western Australia, Jo is an international speaker on topics like user experience, accessibility, and gender equality. She's committed to ensuring a seamless user experience and today shares her insights from practical, everyday usability testing. Jo's presentation, entitled Budget-Friendly Usability Testing for WordPress, helped attendees understand what usability testing is and clarified why it differs from other testing methods. She shares examples from her work showing how small changes can significantly impact user experience, which is better for you, the website builder, and your client, the website owner. We also discuss how usability testing can transform a website's effectiveness by improving conversions. Jo explains the importance of recruiting novice users for testing and highlights how usability testing pushes for real user-centered improvements. Towards the end, Jo shares practical advice on when and how to integrate usability testing into your process, advocating for early and iterative testing to preemptively address potential issues. If you're looking to gain a deeper understanding of usability testing and its benefits, this episode is for you. If you're interested in finding out more, you can find all of the links in the show notes by heading to wptavern.com/podcast, where you'll find all the other episodes as well. And so, without further delay, I bring you Jo Minnie. I am joined on the podcast by Jo Minnie. Hello, Jo.
Hi, it's good to be back again.
Yeah, Nathan. You've been on the podcast before, but this time is different because this time we're actually facing each other. Last time we were doing it on, you know, something like Zoom or something like that. But here we are staring at each other because we're at WordCamp Asia. We're in the Philippines, Manila. It is the second day of the event, kind of. We had contributor day yesterday. Today is presentation day. It's the first day of the presentations. And you're doing one.
I've done one, actually. I did it at 11 o'clock this morning.
How did it go?
It went really well. I think I had very good feedback from it. Half of the things on my slides didn't work. I think that's normal for a conference, though. And I'm pretty experienced now at just winging it and rolling with it anyway. So it was really exciting because it's a topic that I'm super passionate about and I haven't had a chance to speak about it at a conference before. So yeah, it was really nice to be able to share something that I do on a day-to-day basis and can stand up there and really confidently talk about.
I don't think I've ever spoken about this subject before in any of the podcasts that I've done. That is quite nice and it's novel. I'll just introduce the topic. The presentation that you gave was called Budget-Friendly Usability Testing for WordPress. And obviously that sort of sums it up. We're going to talk about usability testing. But before we do that, Jo, just to nail your colours to the mast a bit. Tell us about you, where you're from, what you do for a job, and anything that you think's relevant to this podcast.
Okay, I really like cats and pockets.
I saw that in your show notes. Why pockets?
Okay, so I think pockets are a great example of something that can be both a fantastic and a terrible user experience. You are like, oh yeah, maybe I know what you're talking about, but let me ask, do you live with a woman?
I do.
I know that's a very personal question, sorry Nathan, but how many times on average a month does she complain about not having pockets in her clothing?
Never. She carries a bag.
Yeah, but why do we have to carry a bag, right? She has to carry a bag because her clothing doesn't have pockets. So I spoke at a conference late last year and I asked this question. This has been a life goal of mine, was to speak about pockets at a conference, and I managed to do it. I asked all of the women in the audience, hands up if you've ever thrown out clothes or gotten rid of them because they didn't have pockets in. And every single woman stood up and was like, yes, I've gotten rid of clothes because they didn't have pockets in. Most of the people that were there were men. And I said, stand up if you don't have pockets in your clothes right now. And 400 men stayed seated. But this is an example of something where, yes, there's a subsection of the population that's experiencing this problem, but it's a big problem for us. It's very frustrating. You're at a conference, you don't want to have to carry around a handbag. So pockets, they're a great example of user experience.
Okay, I get it. I understand now. Tell us a little bit about your sort of day-to-day work, though. You work with WordPress, I guess.
I do. So I run a small agency. We're what I usually call a micro agency. And we have only three of us that are working on the WordPress team. We do website development, but specifically for charities, nonprofits, cause-based organizations. So a lot of social enterprises and that sort of thing. On top of that, I also do consulting for user experience research. I'm not a designer. UX and UI often get lumped together. They're very different. UI is about the interface and what people see, and UX is about user experience and how people use things. And they can't be completely separated, but they're also very different. So I'm lucky because I work in the niche that I work in, that I'm able to do a lot of usability testing. And it's something that a lot of people don't get the experience to do. And so I thought I would share what I've been able to learn over having this sort of unique opportunity to do so much usability testing and share with people how they can do it more cost effectively, but also the benefit that it can have for a project.
Let's dig into it. And I'm going to actually crib the questions which you posed to the audience today. You put four questions surrounding your subject. And the first one is this, and I'm sure that the listeners to this podcast, if they're anything like me, they'll probably have some impression that usability testing is a thing that you could do. And I think the word there is could, as opposed to do. I imagine most people have an impression of what it is, but whether or not they do it is another thing altogether. But that would then lead to this. What even is it? So what is usability testing and what are you actually testing for? So that was a question you posed to the audience and now I'm throwing it right back at you.
Yeah, it's a good question. It's probably the sensible place to start. So usability testing is not the same as user testing or user acceptance testing. And it's focusing on how do we identify what the problems are with something that we have created. So a lot of UX research is focused on what we call quantitative testing. So meaning we're looking for quantities of something. It could be the amount of time it takes someone to do an action. It could be using heat maps. So we have 1,000 users. Let's see where their cursors most often are going. Let's see how often they scroll down the page. And quantitative testing is really good at showing you comparisons of whether one thing or another thing works better, but it's not actually good at identifying what the problem is, only that there is a problem. So you can do a lot of testing and still not know what the problem is. Usability testing is different because it's what we call qualitative testing. So it means that we're not looking for big numbers. We're not looking for lots of data. We're looking for really deep user experience examples. And in a nutshell, the way that that works is you recruit some participants, usually 5 people per round is ideal. And often I get asked, well, how can you have statistically significant data with only 5 people? That's not the point of qualitative testing. The point of qualitative testing is not to have statistically relevant data, it's to have the actual user experiences. So you recruit your people, you come up with your research questions, and that's the problem that you're trying to solve or the question you're trying to get an answer to. So an example might be, are users going to recognize this label that I've used in my navigation? Is this button going to get clicked if I put it in this location? It's often a thing that if you're working with a customer to develop a website for them, what we find is that often the things that we're testing for in usability testing are things that the customer and I disagree on, or things where they weren't sure when they made the decision in the first place. And they're a great example of things that you want to test for. But the research questions are only the first part, because if I say the example I used in my talk today is that we had a support service directory, and this was for people who were experiencing family domestic violence, and they didn't want to use the term directory because it's a very harsh term, so they had called it support services, which sounds on the surface like a good idea, but a lot of the people that are using their platform are not English first language, and they also tend to be in a really stressed out state, as you can imagine. And so what we actually found is that when we said to them, can you imagine you're helping someone? Can you help them find a legal service that will enable them to get a restraining order or something like this? What we found is that repeatedly, they didn't go to support services to start with. The minute we changed that to service directory, they started to find the thing that we wanted them to click on. It's such a small change, but it made a huge impact to the usability. Now we found that out after the second test, which meant that we were able to change it after the second test. And then we had three more tests where we could show that every time they were able to find the thing that we wanted them to be looking for. So this is an example where the research question and the research task or the activity that we're giving to the user, they're not the same thing. If we said to them, find support services, find the service directory, if we use that language, obviously they're going to look for that label. But instead, we asked them to do an activity that would hopefully take them to the place we wanted them to go to. And then finally, the last step is to iterate that and to actually take that data and make decisions and make improvements to the project iteratively to try and make it better. That's the goal, right, is to find what the problems are and fix them. So we still have to work out how to fix them, but at least we know what the problems are and not just that people are not clicking on the button and we don't know why.
I have a couple of follow-up questions. First thing isn't a question, it's an observation. So that's already cleared up in my head what it is. So that's amazing. But one of the things that I want to know from that is, do you filter out people who, let's say, for example, you've got a website, the kind that you just described, do you filter out people who are not the target audience? So in other words, I don't know, maybe that's not a perfect example, but let's say on some websites, would it be better to have really inexperienced users of the internet as your five candidates?
That is exactly the ideal person.
So people who are just, I've never come across this before. You want people who are potentially bound to be confused. If somebody's going to be confused, it's you five.
That is the ideal participant for a usability study. And often people say, I want to start learning how to do usability testing. Where should I start? And my advice to them is always the same: with your mum. Recruit a person that's a generation older than you, because I can guarantee that in most cases, sorry to generalize, but they tend to be less efficient and less used to technology because they haven't grown up with it. So for millennials and younger, we have had technology for all of our adult lives and most of our childhood. For my parents' generation, they have had to learn that technology as an adult, and so their brains have a different mental model. And they don't take for granted things that we take for granted. Like when I click the logo, it will take me back to the homepage. I know that. You know that. Your mum might not know that. And I think that is something that is really valuable, is to understand the benefit of testing with people who aren't as experienced with technology, who don't speak English as a first language, who are experiencing some kind of accessibility challenge, whether that's using assistive technology, being colorblind. Things like that are really good things to try and get some cross-sectional representation in your testing participant pool.
So the idea then is that you've got these novice users who hopefully will immediately illustrate the point. And it's driven by questions. So it's not just, we're just going to stand over your shoulder and watch you browse the internet. And when you do something and describe you're looking for something and you can't find it, that's not how it's done. It's more, okay, here's a defined task, do this thing. And we're going to ask you to do five things today. We want you to achieve them all and describe what you're doing. But it's more of that process. And then the idea is that you go from an imperfect website, slowly over time, iterating one problem after another towards a better. website. The goal is never reached. It's just an iterative process.
That's it. Perfection does not exist.
Right. Okay, so that's interesting. So we start with the novice. We've got a small cohort of people. We ask them specific questions and we get feedback about those specific questions. So the other thing that I wanted to ask then is, when do you do it? Because it feels like you need to build the website first, then show it to people. So there's got to be something. This isn't a process of discovery prior to the website. You need pixels on pages, buttons that are potentially mislabeled or what have you. Is that the case? Build first, then usability test afterwards. There's no usability testing prior to the initial build.
It's kind of a trick question because you can usability test at most stages. Probably the only stage you can't usability test at is when you don't yet have a sitemap. Having said that, my recommendation is, assuming you had unlimited budget and unlimited time, I would do at minimum 2 rounds of usability testing, and I would do 1 before you have any design, and I would do it just using wireframes. So we build interactive wireframes using WordPress. So for the demo that I did today, I spun one up. I used InstaWP. You can get like a 7-day website or something through there. It took me 42 minutes to build out the website in just the block editor with no design or anything, just the layout of it. And I was eating a loaded potato at the time. So if I can do that in 42 minutes eating a loaded potato, and that's not my job, I think it's a pretty efficient and cost-effective way of being able to do early usability testing. And often the thing that we're testing for there is, like, have I got the right navigation structure and hierarchy? Are the labels that I'm using sensible for people? Do they fit with the mental models of what our users are actually expecting? And the benefit of doing it that early is that when you don't have a design applied, it's a lot easier to identify problems, because there is a thing that happens in human psychology, and there's a lot of psychology in user experience. And there's a thing that happens where if something's pretty, we will say that it is easier to use. Our experience is that it's easier to use because it's nice to look at. And that's great. That means that UI is really important, but it also means that if you have a really nice UI, it can mask problems that you have in the background. It is great that things can be easier if they're pretty, but imagine how much easier they would be if they worked well and were pretty. That's what we should be aiming for. So typically we would do 1 round of usability testing when we just have a framework and just have the navigation. When someone lands on a page, sometimes we'll just write a message on there and say, congratulations, you found the service directory where you can find this thing, this thing, this thing, this thing. And then we put a little button there. When they click it, it releases confetti on the page. So they get a dopamine hit and it's like, yay, I completed the activity. You don't have to have all of your content in place to be able to do testing and identify early that you've got problems that you need to fix.
It sounds almost like an overly complicated design is the enemy of usability. We're drawn towards beautiful, but sometimes maybe beautiful just is overwhelming. You know, there's lots of colors on the page, the buttons get hidden, there's just too much text on there. Looks great, but it might be sort of masking the thing that you're really trying to show. And it feels like there's this tightrope act of trying to balance one thing against the other. Yeah, that's really interesting. So with the wireframe thing, in that case, you're really just testing, can the person find the thing? But I'm guessing once you move beyond the wireframe stage and you've got a website, it's literally out on the internet, it's functional, it's exactly what we hope would be the perfect version, then you're drilling into more detail. You know, can a person find this resource? Do they know that this button is what we're intending them to click? Those kind of things.
Yeah. So I think things like searchability and discoverability are much easier to test for in the early stages when you're just doing, say, using like a wireframe or a prototype. And things like usability, you really do need to have the complete designed product to be able to test for them well. And I say that there's actually kind of 4 categories of the different types of tasks that we can do. I'll give you the link to the blog post that I wrote that has all of this in detail because we do not have time to go deep into that today. But things like, does my search form work the way that I want it to? They're the sorts of things that you do have to do some development to be able to get them working. So it's not always practical to do that at the very early stages when you do want to start testing your navigation and stuff like that. Something that you can do is, if you've only got enough budget or enough time to be able to do, say, 5 usability tests total, you could do 2 of them early and then you could do 3 of them towards the end after you have the majority of the design and the development work in place. Users are pretty forgiving when they're doing a usability test. If you say this is still a work in progress, there might be a couple of pages that look odd and aren't quite ready to go live yet. If you get somewhere and you're not sure, you can just go back. It's okay. It's not meant to be a perfect experience. The point is that you're getting their real-time thoughts and feedback as they're doing it. So it's really important that you try and encourage them to follow the Think Aloud protocol, which is really outlining every single thing that goes through their head. Just brain dump on me, please. Like, I just want to hear all of your thoughts and thought processes. And the only thing as the facilitator that I will say during a usability test is, tell me what you're thinking. And other than that, I'm completely silent. So even when it comes to giving them the activity, so if I'm asking you to do an activity like help somebody find a legal service that they can use in this particular state, I would actually send that task to you via the chat or something like that. I would send the task to you via the chat, and then I would get you to read that task back to me, because I don't want you to be thinking about how I'm saying it. I want you to be able to go back to that task and look at it and think about it and process everything inside your own head. But I want you to be telling me all of that. So often we will find people ask questions during that, like, what should I do next? And the answer to that is really hard to train yourself out of replying to them with anything other than, what would you do if I wasn't here? And I think that's the hardest thing about learning to facilitate a usability test.
Yeah, in a sort of an ideal scenario, you wouldn't even be in the room. But in some strange way, you'd be able to just get into their head and say, okay, now I want you to do this. But every time you've got a problem, just figure it out and we'll watch. But you have to be there because you have to be able to listen to what they're saying and what have you. Oh, that's
yeah,
curious.
And yeah. We do, at the end of each activity, we'll then ask them for feedback on how they found it. If they had any suggestions or things that they didn't say out loud while they were doing it that they wanted to share with us, how confident were they with the activity? And did they think that they were successful in it? Which is a really good way of telling, I wasn't really sure what the activity was meant to do, or I wasn't really sure if what I found really met the needs that I was looking for. Then we ask them, how certain are you with the answer that you just gave? And if they're like 3 out of 5, you're like, all right, this person didn't understand what it was that I was asking them to do in the first place. Maybe the problem is actually with my question and not with the website.
Okay, so the whole process is you're not just asking for feedback about the website. There's a whole process of asking for feedback about the process as well, which that's kind of curious.
Meta, it's very meta.
Meta processing, yeah.
For sure.
We're in an industry where at the moment, everything is trying to be automated.
Is this the AI question?
Well, no, this feels like it's a very human thing. You need actual bodies on the ground. So it's really a question of economics, because I'm wondering if this often turns out to be a fairly expensive process. And because of that, I wonder if people push against it because the budgets may not be there, if this is something that clients typically would say, well, okay, tell me how much that's going to cost. It's a nice idea, but okay, it's going to cost us $X thousand because we've got to put 5 people in a room and we've got to pay for your time to moderate the event and come up with the questions and so on. How do we manage that in an era of automation where everything is, the dollar cost of everything has got to be driven down? This feels like the dollar cost is going up because there's humans involved.
Yeah, it's a great question. Have you ever run a Google ad before?
It's expensive.
It's very expensive. It's very expensive to get a new lead. It's a lot more cost-effective to convert a lead than it is to get a new one. And the point of usability testing is to improve conversion of people being able to do the thing that you want them to do on the website. So my first answer to that would be, look at the cost-benefit analysis. It's worth it in most cases to do usability testing. Something that we've found with positioning of usability testing is that if we offer it as an add-on, then people don't want to do it because they don't want to pay for it. They don't see the value in it necessarily. However, we don't offer it as an add-on. We actually have it just as part of our proposal right from the start, where we're like, this is part of the point of difference between what you get when you build with us versus when you build with someone else. They'll tell you what they think is the best way to do something. If we are unsure about the best way to do something or we disagree on it, it's not going to ultimately be me making a decision or you making a decision. We're going to test and we're going to get real evidence from customers. And they're the ones that are going to be developing it. So you know that the final result that you get is going to be the best possible version of the website. And often we might be more expensive than our competitors, but people will go with us because we're not competing on price. We're competing on offering a service that nobody else is offering. I asked today in the presentation who has done usability testing before and not a single person put their hand up.
That would have been my assumption, actually. Yes.
And honestly, I don't think any of the people that we're competing against in the industry that I'm in are doing the same thing as what we're doing. And so it is very much a point of difference. I think it's not a well understood technique, but it's so valuable that it is a really easy way to position yourself as being different and really actually do a better job for your customers, for the people that you're building websites for, because ultimately you're going to have a better result at the end of it.
The interesting thing there is when I say usability testing, somehow in my head, there is a connection between that and accessibility. And that's not where I'm going with this question, but there's just something about it being unnecessary. And I'm not binding that to the word accessibility. What I'm saying is clients often think, I don't need to do that. Obviously, we're moving into an era where legislation says otherwise, but I can just leave it over there. I don't need to worry about that. Usability testing, not for me. However, the lever that you've just pulled, it completely changes the dynamic because you've pulled an economic lever, which is that if we can get everybody to follow this action, I don't know, fill up the cart with widgets and then press the buy now button and go through the checkout process. If that's the thing that you're usability testing, you've made a direct line. You've joined up the dots of, okay, user money. So it's not just about it being a better website so that people can browse around it all day. It's also about connecting the economics of it. So the usability is about people buying, converting, getting the resource. And so there might not be an economic transfer there, but it will be some benefit to your business. They might be downloading that valuable PDF that you want everybody to see or whatever. So that's kind of interesting. That's changed my thoughts about it a little bit. And it is more about that. It's getting an understanding of what you want out the website, getting an understanding if what you think should be happening is actually possible and happening. I sort of summed that up about right.
Yeah, I think that's a really good summary of it. I think the only thing I would add there is that a lot of the times the conversation around accessibility and the conversation around usability do have a lot of crossover. They are fundamentally different. But one of my favorite examples is actually something that I think applies to both. So two of the common problems that we find very early on in design is often to do with color. And so one of them is color contrast and the other one is colorblind accessibility. And I think it's a great way to get people to change their thinking and their perception of the way we have these conversations is if you have an e-commerce website, Nathan, what would you say if I said to you, I can instantly get you 8% more customers?
Yeah, I'd say that's great.
And I'd be like, cool, change your buttons so that colorblind people can read them because 8% of men are colorblind. So actually it's only 4% of people because assuming half of them are men, then you've actually only got 4%, but still 8% of men are colorblind. That's a big percentage of the population. So if your button is red and green, then you're going to have a problem. People are not going to be able to find the thing that you want them to click to give you their money. Likewise, if you want people to be able to use your website when they're outside and using their phone in sunlight, then you need to have good color contrast on your website. So often this conversation is around, well, I don't have people who are disabled. I'm not trying to cater to people that are using screen readers. It doesn't matter because not very many people that are using my website are blind. And I'm like, well, I'm not blind, but I still struggle when I'm looking at something where the text is too faint and I'm looking at it on my phone and I'm standing outside in the sun because we naturally don't visualize as much contrast there. So I think being able to position it in a way where people can see the value to themselves, I want to use a website that has better contrast. And so it makes that conversation easier with a customer.
I hadn't really drawn the line between accessibility and usability, but it seems like they're partner topics, basically. There's like a Venn diagram, accessibility over here, usability over here, with a massive overlap somewhere in the middle.
100%. It's why we always encourage having that sort of intersection between accessibility and usability in our testing pool. So we always try and have one person who experiences some kind of accessibility challenge, whether that's being colorblind, hearing impaired, if we've got a lot of video on the site, for example. And I think that it can be a really valuable way of collecting multiple data points at one time.
When you have a client that comes to you and they've obviously, by the time that they've signed the contract with you, usability is already part of the deal, it sounds like. How do you decide what's the thing in round one that we're going to pick up on? Is there sort of like a copybook that you go through? Is it like, I don't know, buttons or the checkout or color? Or where do you go first? And sort of attached to that question a little bit, this process never ends, right? In theory, you could do usability testing each month, but I was wondering if you did it like on an annual cycle or something. Yeah.
If you're not changing stuff super often, I would say there's probably more cost-effective ways that you can collect information about it. Typically, we encourage long-term, have things like heat maps and stuff like that. They will help you identify if there is a problem. If you know that there is a problem, let's say you've got a heat map and you're like, why is nobody clicking on our buy now link? That is a good instance of where you would do some usability testing to figure out what the problem is. But if everything's working and you're getting conversions, then probably doing usability testing isn't the most valuable thing that you can do. If you're looking at making significant changes to the way that your website works, that's another good time to introduce a round of usability testing. So we don't do it just for the sake of doing it. We do it because we need to do it and because there's value in it for our customers.
Do you keep an eye on your customers' websites so that you can sort of get ahead of that, if you know what I mean? So let's say that you put heat maps in. Very often that would then get handed over to the client, and it's somebody in the client's company's job is to check the heat maps. Or do you keep an eye on that and, oh, look, curiously, we've seen over the last 12 months, yeah, look at that. There's not much going on over at that very important button over there. Let's go back to the client and discuss that. That could be another round of usability testing.
Yeah, so I think we're not uncommonly, a lot of agencies now do have some kind of retainer program where they will maintain communication and assistance for their clients. So we call them care plans. I know everyone has a different name for it. I think it's pretty standard now in the WordPress ecosystem. It's a very common thing to do. As part of our care plans, we have scheduled meeting with our clients once every 3 months or 6 months or 12 months, depending on how big the site is. And one of the things that we'll do at that time is review their analytics, review their heat maps, that sort of thing. Ask them, have they experienced any problems? Have they noticed a downturn in the people signing up for the memberships? Or have they had any complaints from people about something? Is there anything that they're not sure about? Are they going to be changing the way that they operate soon and introducing something new into their navigation that we need to consider? Where does that fit in the grand scheme of things? I find if we're having those conversations early and we're the ones starting those conversations, then often we're coming to them with solutions instead of them coming to us with problems.
I think that's the key bit, isn't it? If you can prove to be the partner that comes with, we've got this intuition that there's something that we can explore here. You're proactive, you're going to them, not, okay, anything you want, is there anything we can help you with, you know, and the answer to that is always, not really. Whereas if you go and say, look, we've got this idea based upon some data that we've seen, we've got heat maps and what have you, shall we explore that further? That seems much more credible. You're far likely, I think, to have an economic wheel which keeps spinning if you adopt that approach, as opposed to the, is there anything you want doing kind of approach.
Absolutely. I think every developer's worst nightmare is having a customer come back to them and say, I've just noticed that I haven't had anyone send through anything in my contact form for the last 3 weeks. And I've just noticed when I went and tested it that the contact form's not working anymore. I'm sure I've had that nightmare at least once. And I think if you can avoid being in that situation where they're coming to you with something like, oh my God, it's broken, how do I fix it? If instead you can go to them and be proactive about it and just kind of keep your finger on the pulse. Yes, there's a little bit of ongoing work, but like, honestly, I jump on, I check all of the analytics maybe once every 3 months for my clients. I set aside one day to do it, go and have a look through that. If I notice anything, I can usually fix it, make sure that we're collecting the data again before it becomes a problem. And then that way, when there is an issue, we've got data that we can back up and we can start from there and go, okay, yes, we've identified, here's where we need to do more research. And then we can apply something like usability testing to that.
How much of your time on a monthly basis, let's say as a percentage, do you spend on usability of existing clients? Is this something that is a lot of the work that you do? What I'm trying to figure out here is, for people listening, is this something that they can turn into a real engine of their business? Because you might get 2 days, 3 days work a week just on the usability of pre-existing clients. So in a sense, you've created interest and work out of thin air because these clients already exist. They're in your roster, but there's a whole new thing that we can offer to them. So how much do you spend doing it?
Yeah, so it's a great question. I would say it's cyclical. I couldn't really say like I always spend this much amount of time. There might be entire weeks that go by where my whole life is usability testing, and there might be a month that goes by where I don't do any. And it really does often depend on where our projects are in the life cycle at any particular time. So we're often working on projects that will span over years. And because of that, they might introduce a completely new part of their project. And that's a good time to reintroduce that usability testing. As I said, like, you don't really want to do it just for the sake of doing it. But at the same time, if you can show that there will be value in making a change, if you can show that there is a lost opportunity somewhere, then 100% you can sell that. The value to them of, hey, you could spend $1,000 now, but you could be earning $5,000 more every month for the next several years. That's a no-brainer, right? People are happy to make investment if they can see that there's going to be a cost benefit for them in the future, or if the thing that they're trying to do is maybe they're a government website or something and they've got a particular thing that they need to meet, they've got KPIs. If you can show that you're able to help them meet those KPIs, then they are going to invest in doing that thing that you're trying to offer them.
We talked about the Venn diagram of accessibility and usability and the fact that there's a lot of an overlap. In the year 2025, this is a year where, in Europe at least anyway, accessibility, the legal cogs are turning and the screw is getting tighter. So accessibility is becoming mandated in many respects. And I was wondering about that, whether there was any kind of overlap in legislation on the usability side. The accessibility piece is obviously easier to sort of define in many ways, and it's going to become less optional. But I was wondering if there was any usability legal requirements. I don't know quite how that would be encapsulated.
Sort of. An example that comes to mind is that there are a lot of practices that historically have been really prevalent on the internet, and they've been identified as being really bad for usability, and they've actually now been identified as being so bad that they're almost evil. And they've started to crack down on those. And an example of that is, have you ever tried to unsubscribe from a gym? It's basically impossible. And so now, if you, at least in Australia, I know, if you have a subscription on your site, you legally have to have a way of people being able to unsubscribe without having to call someone or send an email somewhere. And that is an example where that is actually usability. And I think there are definitely things where we're picking up on stuff that is maybe a shady way of working and a shady way of developing websites. And those things are starting, we're starting to cut down on them. I'm not sure if that is purely usability or just like not being a bad person, but I think that there is definitely the only reason that we know that those things are a problem is because we have all had those bad experiences. And ultimately, that's all user experience is. It's just how good or bad is the experience of using a platform.
I share your frustration with those kind of things because I've been through that process, not just cancelling a subscription, but I don't know, something that you've got yourself accidentally into and you don't want to be on that email list anymore. Seemingly no way to get yourself off it.
They've changed the unsubscribe link so it doesn't have the word unsubscribe in it. And now you just have to look for the word that's not underlined or highlighted in a different color that when you hover over it, something pops up and you're like, oh, that's the link. That thing that says manage preferences down the bottom hidden in the wall of text. That is a shady practice. That is a poor user experience just as much as it's just a bad thing to do.
I think it's got the label of deceptive design now. It used to be called dark patterns, didn't it? But deceptive design, this notion of doing things in such a way to just deliberately confuse the user so that the green big button, which is the exact opposite of what you want to click, is the one which is visible. And then there's this tiny little bit of grayed out text, which is the one which clearly you've ended up at this page. That's the one you want. That's the enemy of usability in a way. But for the business, it may be exactly what they want because it keeps the economic engine rolling. Yeah, that's interesting. I wonder if there'll be more legislation to tighten those things up so that they're not allowed. Yeah, that's fascinating. Last question. We're running out of time. Last question. And it refers to something that we talked about earlier. I'm guessing this really never ends. This is a journey which you begin, you tweak it, you do a little bit, you fix, and then you start again a little bit later and what have you. Is there ever a moment though where you go to a client and say, we did it. This site, as far as we're concerned, is now perfect? Or is it never a goal? It's a journey and never a destination.
I think you'll probably agree with me here, Nathan, that it's basically impossible to be perfect because ultimately, someone is always going to have a different opinion. Someone's always going to think that your shade of purple is too dark. Someone is always going to dislike the font that you chose because it's not loopy enough or it's too loopy, right? So I don't think there is such a thing as perfect. But through doing 5 usability tests, 5 people, you can pick up at least 85% of the potential problems with your design. And I'm not aiming for perfect, but I know that for me, if I can confidently say to my customers that I've been able to identify 85% of the potential problems that they might experience, in their project, then they can confidently go away and say, hey, we're pretty happy with what we've got. We can definitely improve on that over time. But that is a huge milestone to be able to hit. And being able to have enough data and enough research to confidently say that, I think is a really big win, both for us and for our customers.
Sadly, Jo, time is the enemy. And I feel like we've just pulled back the lid a teeny tiny bit on the big subject of usability. Honestly, I reckon I could talk for another 2 hours on this at least, you know, because you got into colors there and all sorts. And there's just so many tendrils that we haven't been able to explore. But we've prized it open a little bit. And so hopefully the listener to this has become curious. If they have, where would they find you? What's a good place to discover you online?
Yeah, so I think the best place is to hit up my personal blog, jominey.com. So it's jominey.com. And I have a lot of stuff on there about usability testing. I have a blog post that I wrote specifically for this talk that shares all of the resources that I use to put together the slides and everything. The talk itself will be on WordCamp TV. If you're on socials and you want to hit me up, pretty much the only platforms I'm active on nowadays are LinkedIn and Blue Sky, and I'm Jo Minney on both of them.
Jo Minney, thank you so much for chatting to me today. I really appreciate it.
You're most welcome, Nathan. Thanks for having me again.